NBC Radio, News on the Hour. Brought to you by Super Anahist Antibiotic Nasal Spray. The new way to clear up nasal sinus congestion fast. And now, here is Leon Pearson, NBC News.
President Eisenhower commented this morning that the Democratic victory was a vote for advocates of greater federal spending, which he would continue to oppose. By the latest tabulation, the new Congress will include 276 Democrats against 138 Republicans in the House, 61 Democrats against 34 Republicans in the Senate, a few races still undecided. Just in from New Mexico, John Burroughs, Democrat, virtually unknown politically, has swept Governor Ed Mechem, Republican, out of office in one of the greatest political upsets in the history of the state. In California, it now looks as if the margin of victory of Ed Brown over Senator Nolan for the governorship might be a million votes. In Minnesota, Andrew Knutson, who failed to persuade his wife Koya not to run for Congress, got his wish today. She was defeated. We'll have a report from Formosa about the U.S. elections after this word from Anahist Research Laboratories.
Cold, flu, sinus sufferers, now clear up nasal sinus congestion faster with
three nasal sprays in one.
New Super Anahist Antibiotic Nasal Spray. When a cold or flu strikes your nasal sinus area, three things happen. One, membranes swell. Two, germs attack. Three, mucus clogs your nasal sinus passages. Watery mist sprays can't even get through the mucus. But Super Anahist Nasal Spray acts three ways. One, Super Anahist Spray melts away mucus with exclusive Fonzide. Two, it kills germs on contact with a medically proved antibiotic. Three, Super Anahist Miracle Decongestants shrink swollen membranes to open nasal sinus passages. You breathe easy, faster. Remember, only Super Anahist Nasal Spray contains mucus-melting Fonzide, a germ-killing antibiotic, plus decongestants that shrink swollen nasal sinus membranes.
Three nasal sprays in one.
Get new Super Anahist Antibiotic Nasal Spray.
And here again is Leon Pearson.
Newsmen asked the president this morning if the Democratic election victories might not prompt a change of the administration foreign policy and if the U.S. was moving toward recognizing two Chinas. Mr. Eisenhower replied that the United States will not change its policy toward Red China so long as it does things which, as he put it, the American people cannot stomach. Nevertheless, there are apprehensions in nationalist China. We switch to Roland Gould in Taipei.
Nationalist China officially is silent tonight on trends in U.S. election returns. One government official tells me this is an internal matter for the United States. It is not proper for us to comment. Officials here refuse comment even on the defeat of Senator Nolan for the California governorship. Although Nolan is widely known here for his past championship of the nationalist Chinese cause. The nationalist government, however, is known to be concerned about possible long-range effects of increased Democrat strength in Senate and House, as a possible modifying influence on uncompromising U.S. foreign policy towards communist China, with nationalist China's future perhaps becoming a political football in U.S. presidential election preliminaries. This is Roland Gould, NBC News, Taipei.
When the new Congress convenes with its strong Democratic majority, a revision of the China policy, and indeed of foreign policy in general, may be forced upon the president. Democratic leaders are now in a position to demand, as a price for cooperation, that those elements of the Dulles policy, specifically in the Middle East and the Far East, which have been widely criticized in the campaign, should be modified. This pressure may even go so far as to ask for the removal of the Secretary of State. Although the president alone has authority to appoint and remove members of the cabinet, he may find it expedient to make a change as the best way to get a working agreement with the Congress. In fact, even before the elections, a drive was underway by Democratic senators to force a change of foreign policy. That drive may now gain considerable momentum. This is Leon Pearson, NBC News.
Now we take you to Hollywood to meet the star of Viceroy Cigarettes' great show, The Texan. It's Rory Calhoun.
Hi. You know, I enjoy playing the Texan. He's a man who doesn't get pushed around. He thinks for himself. That's important in choosing a cigarette, too. There's a lot of conflicting filter claims around these days, but when you think it through for yourself, the choice is easy. It's Viceroy. Only Viceroy has a thinking man's filter and a smoking man's taste.
This has been NBC News on the Hour. Listen again on the Hour for NBC Radio News, brought to you by Viceroy, the cigarette with a thinking man's filter, a smoking man's taste.
Hear Washington Farm Report with Richard Harkness weekdays on NBC. weekly news conference at the White House, President Eisenhower discussed the results of yesterday's elections around the nation and touched on other important topics. Because of the special interest in this conference, NBC now brings you, over the next half hour, portions of the presidential meeting with reporters, questions and answers at the White House news conference. The first question is from Merriman Smith of United Press International.
During the past campaign, you told the public repeatedly that the Democrats were left-wing extremists. You pictured them as apostles of wholesale reckless spending and phony doctrines committed to demagogic excess. Now, against that background, sir, what do you think caused the Democratic landslide, and particularly, how do you propose, as you promised to do during the campaign, as head of this administration, to fight these Democrats who now are in commanding control of the House and Senate?
Well, first of all, I must remind you, you did not read my talks accurately. I continued to talk about the spender wing of the Democratic Party. I was very careful. I am sure you will never find any place in my whole campaign when I talked about the Democratic Party as a whole and in terms of accusation of any kind. Most I ever said about the Democratic Party was split down the middle. Now, I did talk about the spender wing. And apparently that didn't make any great impression, for obviously we didn't get enough Republican votes. But I would like to say a word about the importance of that spending to everyone in this room, and since you are representative, I'll say to all 175 million people. Next year, we are going to have to refund $50 billion of bonds of more than 1 year length. We have, during that same time, roll over something of the order of $23 billion worth of short-term notes, I think four times, certainly three. I forgot, I think it was three or four. Finally, we've got to find more than $12 billion of new money, and next fall, from a seasonal, because of our seasonal way in which our income comes into the Treasury, we will have to make temporary borrowings of considerable amount of money. Now, this, to my mind, is a very serious thing, because I'm convinced that the two principal spurs to inflation are, one, the continuous wage price spiral, and the other is unnecessary federal spending, particularly federal deficits of the size that we had to face up to this year. We have got to stop spending if we are going to keep further dilution of the dollar from taking place. And I have this one conviction. All of you know to the extent to which I am dedicated to the whole theory of liberty and freedom and a free enterprise. And I believe that these things, we cannot have these concepts applied completely in our country unless we do stop this money spending. So I did inveigh against that money spending and the people. Matter of fact, I gave quotes, so I think that I was taking them out of sort of historical record. I still do it. I believe that that kind of spending must stop for the United States in the most serious trouble that we can think of.
Mr. President, I'd like to go back to Mr. Smith's question, but quote what you said in Los Angeles after saying that the Democratic Party was dominated by political radicals. You said, either choose left-wing government or sensible government. Spencer government or responsible government?
I said the dominant wing of the Democrat Party.
Well, Mr. President, do you think that the people yesterday chose left-wing government rather than sensible government?
I think at least this. I don't know whether they did this thing deliberately. I know this, that they obviously voted for people that that I would class among the spenders. And that's what I say is going to be the real trouble. And I promise this. For the next 2 years, the Lord sparing me, I am going to fight this as hard as I know how. And if we don't, I just say that, well, in the long run, everybody else that is responsible has got to fight it. The conservative Democrats, the newspapers, every kind of person that's got the brains to see what is happening to this country with our loose handling of our fiscal affairs has got to fight it.
President Byrd of the Chicago Tribune, what factors do you think caused the Republican defeat and the Democratic victory?
Well, I don't know, of course, what trends might have occurred that you really can't unearth, but I'll tell you this. I agree with what the Vice President said last night and what the Chairman of the Republican Party. The Republicans are prone to campaign very hard the last week or 2 weeks or 2 months of an election, and they don't fight between elections. I believe that Mr. Alcorn is correct when he says that if the Republicans don't start fighting this morning, this very day, for the next election, they're going to in a bad way. And I believe this is true throughout the country.
Sir, after some of your campaigning, do you anticipate additional trouble with the Democratic Congress this time?
Not at all. I've always dealt with the Democratic Congress and what I thought, in my honest conviction, was good for the country. And I think there's a lot of them believe that they want to do what's good for the country. And I assure you again that I'm talking about a good many people in that party.
Mr. Horst of the Detroit News. Sir, in order that the government can stay fiscally sound, do you feel that the new Congress must come up with new taxes to meet these deficits that you say we are facing?
I don't know, sir. And a matter of fact, my advisors and I have really decided what we must do. And I don't think we should talk yet about raising taxes. What I think we should do is getting down expenditures. We have been too lavish in too many things, starting, indeed, in my opinion, in certain things in defense, because yet we have not eliminated the duplications, the unnecessary expenditures that are going on, and we must start right from the biggest and go right down to the smallest.
Ruth Montgomery of Hearst Newspapers. Mr. President, do you regard Nelson Rockefeller now as a strong candidate to succeed you in 2 years?
Well, that's one thing I haven't yet, one thought I haven't approached or even thought of at all. I am delighted that he is elected, and I've congratulated him warmly this morning, but I don't think it's time now to be talking about that far in the future.
Do you foresee any change in role for Mr. Nixon within the administration in the next 2 years?
Why, I wouldn't think so, Mr. Kent. Actually, the president has no constitutional power over the vice president, and therefore everything that the vice president does here is because of our cooperation between the two of us and because he has complied with my request. Now, in doing so, he has been a party to every principal governmental committee or organization that we have, and therefore is not only kept informed of what is going on, but is in a very splendid position to contribute his thinking. But I don't see how his role in the executive branch could be greater.
President, Hightower of the Associated Press. Mr. President, the Soviet government seems intent on forcing out of the country its most famous author. What do you think of the Pasternak case? And specifically, would Mr. Pasternak be welcome in the United States?
Well, I hadn't got to the last part of your question in my own thinking. This is a case that has not been analyzed within our own governmental circles. I have read about it carefully. I am shocked that even the Soviets would do this kind of thing, to take an author who has been so honored by the Nobel Prize group, and then apparently condemn him because he some of the things he said didn't coincide with their doctrine. It's sort of a sad thing, I believe, that when we find a brain and a creative mind of that kind, finally told in effect, you will either write what we say or you won't write. So it's a terrible thing, and I put it this way. I don't know, I'm not going to go into the details of the immigration laws because it might be something I don't know about them, but if he came in, I'd like to see him talk to him.
Any change in the administration's foreign policy as a result of the election?
Foreign policy?
Foreign
policy?
Yes, sir.
No, I think that we will, on the contrary, I think we will struggle right square along the lines we've laid out today.
Could you tell us what you think your role in the 1960 elections will be? Are you going to insist on a strong voice in naming the presidential candidates on the Republican ticket? Do you think your campaign...
My role for the next 2 years is to do exactly my very best to carry on the responsibilities and duties of the presidency. I'm not even thinking about that election this time, and certainly I would be the last person to try to name any particular candidate.
Friedman, Jewish Telegraphic Agency. A number of organizations, religious organizations, Jewish, Protestant, Catholic, have urged you to call a national White House conference to rally public opinion against racial and religious bigotry. And I wanted to know if you could tell us how you feel about that, sir.
Well, I would say two things. First, I think that for the past 6 years, no one in this room has ever heard me argue for anything except readiness to obey the laws and to educate ourselves, each of us, to reach the kind of understanding that does permit equality of opportunity among all citizens. Now, I have White House conferences suggested to me at least once a week. Now, I'm not so certain that White House conferences are the way to rally opinion of this kind. I believe that opinion does not have to be rallied always by some spectacular conference of that kind.
There's also been an election in Cuba, and a judge in there is continuing to go on, and a good many Americans have been captured and some have been killed. Could you give us the American policy toward the Cuban rebellion at this time?
Well, there's very little state, except what our traditional policy is to keep out of anything so far as it is humanly possible in such a thing as that, except when our own citizens are involved, and then to take the proper steps to protect them.
Mr. President, NBC, on another aspect of the election, what do you think was the primary reason that so many Democrats were elected? Was it local issues, or was it perhaps disenchantment with the administration nationally?
Disenchantment with what?
With the administration.
Well, so far as I know, I have never varied in my basic convictions as to the functions of the federal government in our country, and in my beliefs as to what is the great broad middle of the road that United States should be following. I have preached this as loudly as I could for 6 years. Now, after 4 years of that kind of teaching, the United States did give me, after all, a majority of, I think, well over 9 million votes. Now, here only 2 years later, there is a complete reversal, and yet I do not see where there is anything that these people consciously want the administration to do differently. And if I'm wrong, I'd like to know what it is, but I am trying to keep the fiscal soundness of this country and to try to keep the economy on a good level keel and to work for peace. Now, if they want me to do anything else, I don't know exactly what it is.
John Scali, the Associated Press. During the campaign, some few Republicans used the words appeasement and appeasers in criticizing the Democrats. They implied that if the Democrats won, there might be a change in the government policy of resolutely opposing a communist expansion. Now that the Democrats have gained substantially in both the Senate and the House, do you foresee any change in that policy and any change in our basic lines of foreign policy?
No. So far as I don't know of any way in which I would change the general lines of our foreign policy. We do have new problems come up every day, and therefore you always have some new solution or some new angle to a solution of that particular problem. But you never vary from your basic principles. And frankly, I do not know of any a Democrat in responsible position that would want to vary from that basic belief and practice. And I think the criticism which you have repeated, and which I did not happen to read those, it must have been against some particular person, what some particular individual said, because certainly I don't believe anyone would say this, that the Democratic Party as such was appeasers.
Roberts of the Washington Post. Mr. President, in using the term radical wing of the Democratic Party, that is the northern and western wing, I believe both you and the vice president and the chairman of the national committee used that. Whose idea was that? Who originated that tactic for the campaign?
I haven't the slightest idea, but I certainly didn't with collaboration with anybody else. There was no concerted thing. I use the term and frequently, because I believe people that are arguing for spending of federal money that's not in sight and with damaging our monetary system, as they apparently want to do, can deserve exactly that name. But that's a radical group.
Now, Morgan, ABC. Mr. President, I'd like to take a crack at the question about Mr. Rockefeller from a slightly different tack. One of the things that you've most consistently emphasized is the need for young, vigorous leadership in the Republican Party. For a long time, leading politicians, notably those in your party, have considered Mr. Nixon as the front runner for the Republican nomination for president in 1960. Now comes along another new Republican face in the person of Mr. Rockefeller as a possible challenger. As things stand now, do you consider Mr. Rockefeller a little bit too much on the radical or the spending side, or would you look with equal favor on either man as the standard bearer in 1960?
Well, that, obviously that's a question I wouldn't even dream of trying to answer at this time. There's going to be a practical test of exactly what every man in office is going to do and what he believes. Now, this is what I've said. I'd like to see a whole stable of Republicans of some, let's say, comparatively youthful years, of vigor, of progressive attitudes, but who, above all things, do believe in our free enterprise and are going to try to preserve it. Now, that's what I want.
Gibson of the Wall Street Journal. You've spoken very vigorously this morning about holding down federal spending. Could you say some of the specific areas where you and your subordinates hope that this can be accomplished to the greatest extent?
Every single one, except where existing law forces us to spend the money. And if we think that there's cases where we can get that law amended, I think we would go into that too. But I saw no reason why we should spare any place, because I think every place we're spending too much money.
May Craig of the Press Herald of Portland, Maine. My question is related to spending also. You have mentioned possible economy in defense. You have mentioned dedication to free enterprise. Would you cut in foreign aid, foreign spending, or would you cut domestically in what Democrats call social spending? Housing, schools?
I would say this. Everything we do in the foreign field has as its basic purpose our own national security, our own national prosperity. Now, here's what happens. You must take a matter of judgment. You're not doing these things in the foreign field as a matter just of altruism and charity. You are trying to keep an atmosphere in the world in which we can live, which we can hope at least, finally to get down to some of our armament costs, and where we can prosper. Now, whether it's in the foreign trade or whether it's in technical assistance or these development loans, if you have to do those, if that's your best way to do it, then you ought to spend the money. But you shouldn't spend money unnecessarily anywhere, is my opinion.
Mr. President, Oberdorfer of the Charlotte Observer, in spite of the Democratic trend throughout the country, and in spite of the tensions over Little Rock, the Republicans in the South have managed to keep the beachhead which was established several years ago when you first came into office. How do you explain the fact that the Republican congressmen have done substantially better in the South this year than other Republicans in other parts of the country?
Well, of course, I believe there's a great many people in the South, almost by tradition, almost by habit, do think a bit more earnestly about some of the things I have discussed than, for example, a man who had put in appropriation bills last year that of themselves, an unduplicatory, as far as in his own bills, $23 billion. Now, to my mind, that's the kind of thing that does get some sentiment anywhere where there is people that'll stop and think them over. And apparently they did in that place.
You have been listening to portions of President Eisenhower's regular weekly news conference held this morning at the White House, during which the president, as you have heard, expressed his views on yesterday's election results and on other topics of general interest. Because of the special interest in this morning's conference, NBC has brought you over the preceding half hour portions of the presidential meeting with reporters. Now, this is Peter Hackis in the NBC newsroom in Washington.
This is the NBC Radio Network.